Welcome to the Building Jerusalem podcast. My name's Stephen Neal, the pastor at Oldham Bethel Church and blogger at Building Jerusalem.
And I'm Graham Thompson, pastor at Spen Valley Church and blogger at Mardy to Midland. Talking about what we'd have done differently in Spen as a church plant. You've been here how long now?
Just shy of 6 years.
6 years. Now, obviously, you didn't plant a church.
No.
You came into a nice, established, secure church. So pretty easy going, really. And, of course, you smashed it. Or yeah. is that a bit of a different take from reality?
Yeah, we... The church has been going for a while, so it was planted sometime in the 20s or 30s, so it's a well-established church in that sense. But it was planted as a Pentecostal tent mission.
Right up your street, I would have thought.
I'm totally in line with that.
Theologically, ecclesiology, everything.
Mate, you can't get my hands down in that meeting. But... Yeah, when it was planted, that was it was never quite full-blooded Pentecostalism, yeah. But it was very much Pentecostalish. And then sort of things changed. And I know kind of the story properly from about four pastors ago. Mm. So there was one very, very long-standing Pentecostal pastor who was there. Then from him, it went to a guy who was sort of charismatic. He had some reform leanings but was quite charismatic. He's still in the town. He leads another church now in the town, also has an involvement in another organization. He's a good, decent guy, you know. Then after him, a guy who became a believer in the Anglican church,
right,
ended up going to Germany. Again, was in an Anglican church in Germany. Came back, kind of became convinced of
the Bible.
Yeah, basically. It was sort of went to West.
Yeah.
And then found himself coming to Bethel. He made it very much more reformed. So theologically, it was clearly reformed. It was always sort of Baptistic, but it didn't have any Baptist polity,
right,
or anything like that. I mean, kind of polity was a bit of a mess,
like in lots of churches.
Yeah, it was kind of a nothing, yeah, polity. There were certain posts in the ground, but it wasn't really coherent. And then I came in after that and kind of made it more strict and particular.
Or peculiar.
Yeah. So there was that. And then there were various sort of wings of the church. So there was already a number of Iranian people in the church who were coming from Muslim backgrounds on the whole. There was a sort of old Pentecostal wing. So, and then there was like a slightly charismatic-y wing. And then there was a group of people who, I guess the Iranians probably were the most reformed, because,
yeah,
that's all they'd had. So it was a real hodgepodge of people. And then you realise not everyone is even close to on the same page with stuff. So Dave Skinner, who was the pastor before me,
yeah,
he, godly guy, stayed in the church. I mean, we had discussions about it. He didn't just do it. we had a chat about whether it'd be good for him to stay or whether it'd be better for him to go or whatever.
Yeah.
And we said we'd like him. We thought he was a good, helpful bloke. We actually asked around about him, and other people said they thought he'd be good and helpful. They wanted to stay, and so it all seemed to fit together. I would have made him an elder,
right,
pretty early on. Now, when I arrived at the church, there was no eldership.
None at all?
None.
It was just benign dictatorship?
No, they had... I mean, it effectively was. Not by Dave's design.
Yeah.
But they had kind of the very old-fashioned Pentecostal style of pastor supported by officers.
Officers.
And the officers were effectively deacons.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like a sounding board for the pastor, but the pastor could effectively do what he wanted.
It sounds good, though. I might try that.
That is your setup, isn't it?
Yeah, not quite.
Before I came, one of the things I'd said is, listen, if you want me to come and be the pastor, we have to install elders, yeah. We have to install deacons, we have to sort out some of this polity. Some of it I'm happy to wait on. Mm. So close communion, for example, we do that now. We've only been doing that for 2 or 3 years. That wasn't the case when I came, and I didn't do that immediately because I knew there was a lot of people who didn't want that. I think it's right.
Yeah.
And I said I'd teach it, but I wasn't going to push it through at that point.
Mm.
But things like people coming into membership without being baptized,
yeah.
That historically was the position.
Mm. Not even infant baptism or nothing. Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Wow.
You could be, at one point, Dave tightened up a little bit of this, but at one point you could have been not baptized and a member and take communion and pretty well serve and do anything in the church. I mean, membership existed, but it meant zero.
Yeah.
I don't even think you had to be a member to come to members' meetings.
Wow.
So the only thing I think it stopped you doing is physically voting.
Yeah.
But you could easily direct a conversation.
So you could contribute in a members' meeting.
I think.
Wow.
I think so. Now, Dave tightened some of that up. So I think in practice, you were meant to be baptized before you became a member, but that didn't really happen, and it wasn't written down anywhere. I think Dave tightened that up and said, look, realistically, you need to be baptized to be a member. However, when I arrived, baptism and membership are still separate things.
Yeah.
So you could be baptized and then not be a member.
I mean, that's just the reality in lots of churches, isn't it? People getting baptized as a teenager and not becoming a member, and I just don't get it.
No, I mean, I find it very strange. It seems to confuse what baptism is.
Yeah.
I mean, even our pedo-baptist friends would say kids who are baptised are members of the church.
Yeah.
They sometimes make a distinction, don't they, between full members
and members. Yeah, does that take communion and something, I don't really know.
Federal Vision guys don't.
Yeah.
because they're consistent. But
let's not get into that now.
I know you're sympathetic. But yeah,
we're actually tightening our documents as we speak.
Good. That's what we did. I kind of said, look, you need elders, you need deacons, you need baptism and membership at least to be tied together.
Mm.
I could cope with open communion for a time, but I was very clear, I will teach against that.
Mm.
I will teach that I think close communion's right. And I would like us to move in that direction in time. I said, if you don't want any of those things, that's fine.
Yeah.
Go and find someone else.
Yeah.
And everybody said, yeah, fine. And then hated all of it. fought me tooth and nail and every bit of it, even though I said from day one, that's what I'd do. The only thing that people kind of jumped on board with straight away was the idea of elders and deacons. They kind of got that.
Yeah.
I think because Dave had been saying for quite a long time that's what we needed. Unhelpfully, rather than wait till I got there to appoint some elders, they did that before I got there. Now, one of the guys they appointed, I would have appointed, and he's still an elder now, and he's great, that's fine. I think I'd possibly said in the first meeting, the two guys I can see who would be, Dave was one of them. Well, people didn't want to make Dave an elder straight away after being a pastor. I understood that. I thought it was probably good for him to have a break anyway.
Yeah.
The other guy was also the guy, it's still an elder with us. Everyone was on board with that. So he was made an elder in my absence, but that was fine. There was another guy who was quite new to the church. I didn't realise he was looking at the job at one point. They were keen on him in various ways, but didn't really work. But he said, I'll just come to the church anyway and serve.
Yeah.
They made him an elder pretty well as soon as he got there, which I think was probably the biggest mistake.
Yep.
I didn't see a problem with it at the time, which was my big mistake, because I, that proved to be disastrous. So one thing I would have done differently is just waited a bit longer on that. So I would have put those stakes in the ground and said, that's where we're going to go. And then I would have come for a time and said, I will appoint stuff later, or we will as a church appoint in time.
I remember, I can't remember who it was, some reformer or other. Maybe it was Luther, I don't know, whatever. Maybe Calvin, it was a reformer. Somebody quoting them as saying, when you go to a church that is a bit of a revitalization, or, you know, you're turning it around a bit in some way or other, theologically or whatever, don't change anything for 5 years.
Yeah, that's stupid.
But would you say you changed things too quickly, too slowly? Apart from the eldership thing, obviously. You said you'd have waited.
Well, I don't think I changed it too quickly.
Right.
I think they just appointed elders too quickly.
Right, okay.
That's the issue. I think if something's biblical, you do it. And I think...
Need to build time, though, for the church to come with you?
Depends what it
is. I mean, you said you did on close communion.
How
do you work out those things that are... if you think all these things are biblical, when you're in a revitalized situation, how do you work out, well, it's biblical, but we need to do that now, but that can wait a bit? Or is it, I can take the church with me on this, but not on this? How do you work that decision out?
Yeah, it's going to be a complex of things, isn't it? So some of it is, do I think the church would wear this now or not? And if they won't, I might wait.
Especially if they've got to vote it through.
That's right. Well, yeah, that's the reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very much. If you can't take a majority of people with you, then, to be honest, it's probably a losing battle, isn't it? The other thing, though, is it depends on the context. So what mess has been caused by the unbiblical thing that's going on? And, you know, if things are functioning tolerably... but they are suboptimal, then I would say you can possibly wait on that and try and bring the church with you and say, okay, let's teach on this and try and bring you, and then we'll change it then. If stuff's specifically causing the problem, you don't just sit there and go, well, I've got to keep teaching on this until the church are with me. I think you say, this is so problematic, we need to change it. So, prime example, having people in membership who basically aren't believers.
That's
so problematic that I think we haven't been tight enough about this.
Did you do that straight away?
Near enough. Now, this is contextual. So there'd already been a big division in the church prior to my coming, when somebody put a stake in the ground and said, look, you shouldn't become a member until you get baptized. And a bunch of people hated that. Some people left over it, and it was all... big thing, which I don't really understand, but it was. And so having done that already, me coming along and saying, by the way, when you get baptized, that's going to be the point you become a member, that wasn't such a big change given what had already happened. Plus at this time, I mean, I didn't do that immediately. I didn't turn up on the first day and say, right, we're doing this now. That was kind of, I don't know, 6 months to a year in.
Right.
The other issue I had is because of the appointment of this problematic elder. I mean, that just stymied everything for about 2 years. I mean, it got to a point where it's quite clear within about 6 months, he was basically trying to start a coup in the church to get me sacked, and clearly wanted not to call for me to be sacked, but wanted to sort of organically encourage everybody else to get me sacked, and then he would swoop in and save the church, and he'd be great and awesome and all the rest of it. And so for about a year and a half, I was talking to another pastor friend about a similar scenario, and he said, you know, in the film Gladiator, when the guy gets stabbed and he's trying to fight on having been stabbed, and it's just really difficult. He said it's kind of like that. It's like a guy stabbed you, and you've still got to fight on and do your best, like with one arm behind your back and all the rest of it. And so he had 2 years of that, which was really very unpleasant and really very difficult. And that all stemmed from making somebody an elder before there was any evidence they should have been an elder.
Mm.
Now, if I want to defend myself in that, which I'm not that bothered about doing, but if I was inclined to do that, I'd say that ultimately happened before I got there. However, I didn't raise any red flags and go, don't do that, that's a big problem. I just kind of let that happen and said, well, you know, most people walk into elderships, don't they? So, you know, it's kind of like that. So it'll be fine. And it wasn't fine. And that was a big mistake. But that caused a lot of problems. But then also because of that problem, it stymied everything else. Mm. So what felt like massive opposition to lots of things, actually, you had this elder opposing lots of stuff, basically trying to get support for his opposition. And it was always only one or two people, but it was always presented as three quarters of the church don't want to do this. And I'm not going to tell you my sources ever. Yeah. And, oh, they've all said this and said
there
that.
There are people who think.
Oh, lots of people are saying. always, but lots of people always prove to be about two people. So that was kind of the start and end of the worst problems, really. Yeah. But I do remember it took about 2 years for us to be able to do anything at all because every single thing was a fight. And what ultimately happened in this case, this guy kept having... They were very nebulous problems, and when you ever tried to pin him down on what they were, you couldn't. But that took up such a disproportionate amount of time. Like, there was a period of minimally 6 months, I think probably a year, where every elders meeting was just a discussion about these nebulous issues that you could never get to the bottom of. Until eventually it was just impossible. And then the guy left, went to another local church, did exactly the same thing there, convinced maybe three or four people to go with him from us. So not many people at all. Went to another place, did exactly the same thing, and then left there, taking off far more people with him, and then went and planted. A bit like you, an independent church planter. No one sent him, you know, it's all that. He basically did that in one of the towns, just that's, you know, part of the borough. And that's it, really. Funnily enough, and I don't think I'm on dodgy terms saying this at all, I think pretty well every single person still in our church would look back at that and say that was the best thing that happened to our church. It was absolutely horrible. Again, I don't think this is unreasonable to say mainly for me. No, that's not it. Mainly for my wife, actually. But pretty grim for me. That was sort of the Disney version. but other people were embroiled, and it wasn't very nice. But what it did is, in one fell swoop, there was a group of people, only four or five, who were stopping gospel work from happening, and had stopped gospel work happening for about 25 years. And in one fell swoop, it gave them a vehicle to first show their true colours and then to leave. And I'm always very, very wary of reading circumstances and saying this is what the Lord was doing or whatever, because you can never be certain. But I find it hard not to see a coincidence with the fact that we were banging a drum for our area 2 years and got nothing, no response, no help, no support, no nothing. And immediately, as these guys go, we suddenly start getting financial support. We suddenly start seeing people coming in. We suddenly start seeing gospel doors opening all over the place that just were. And I'm not just talking a little bit. It was like the floodgates opened, you know. And I just think the Lord was clearing that out. And, you know, my predecessor had fought some of these fights, and these guys had clung on. I mean, I come along and built... I would say I built on his foundation. They would probably say I booted them a bit harder. but either way, it got rid of some of these folks who were just... They were just problems. And they were not prepared to grow. And whilst you don't see the answer to every pastoral issue as, well, I hope they leave. I think if that's your pastoral approach, that's pretty bad. But... you want people to grow. And I think that's the ideal. If they won't grow, you at least want them not to be a problem. And if they refuse to grow and not be a problem, then ultimately you want them to go. Because I just think you're stopping everybody from doing anything, and it's no good.
After these folks go, and you want to start pushing through these changes now, what happened next? What did you do? Did you bring in the changes you wanted? What were some of the problems? What would you do different that you've done since then?
Yes, there were. I'd say there were like two stages to it. So these difficult guys, particularly difficult guys, left, and they immediately took one or two, I think. Then there was like a small rump of people who I would have been glad to go, and I thought were going to go with them and didn't. It was kind of at that point I said, right, we're going to do this stuff now that I knew they wouldn't like. And we floated it.
You drive them out.
Yeah, basically. I floated it. I mean, it's all stuff I wanted to do. Yeah. It was all stuff I put on the agenda, but I hadn't done because I knew they wouldn't like it. And then I said, this is what we're going to do now. And they said, oh, we don't like that. And I went, well, there's the door.
Yeah.
And that's, again, it's not how you want to solve every pastoral problem, because you have no church left if you do that. But with people who've been difficult and they've got in the way of things, in the end, you end up saying, well, this is what we're going to do. This is where we're going. And if you don't like it, you can go and find a place that you're happy.
And I think that's something that's true in lots of, well, even in tiny churches like ours, it can be that people have just got used in church to being manipulative and saying, well, you know, if people, we had one different church with Sunday school, you know, if people aren't, teenage children aren't going to have Sunday school, they're going to look somewhere else. And the temptation as a pastor or an elder or whatever is to go, oh, well, you know, that's bad. The right answer is don't let the door hit you on the way out. You know, you've got to be kinder, and obviously you say that's not your first thing or even the desired end goal, but people can't manipulate churches.
And at the end of the day, it comes down to, am I going to do what I think is right and I think is biblical, or am I going to kowtow to people getting upset because they don't like it?
Yeah.
And we basically become this feelings-driven church where if you don't like it, don't worry about it because we won't do it, you know, and everybody knows what the answer to that is when you put it in those terms, but nobody seems to know what the answer is when you're faced with someone saying, well, I'm going to leave if you do that. And you say, well, okay, but do I obey the Lord or do I listen to you? You know, that's where we're at. So we did that. It was close communion, I think, that I did that I knew they wouldn't like, and they left over that. And that was fine. Most people left pretty badly. There was one couple, I would say, they left over that sort of thing, but they didn't leave badly. They just said, look, we know we're not going to be happy. We know it's going to keep doing this. Yeah. We think we'd be happier somewhere else. I said, I think you'd probably be happier somewhere else too. That's fine. Everybody else left in a bit of a huff.
You see, that's what you want, isn't it? There are good reasons to leave churches.
Yeah.
And if you leave well, all God's blessing be on you.
Yeah, I kind of think you either say, I don't like it, but I can submit to it and I'll just crack on. I can't submit to it, so I'm going to say, look, I can't go along with that, but, you know, God bless, I'm going to go over here and not be unhappy. What you can't do is either stay and say, I'm going to make a fuss about it, or leave and try and set off a bomb on your way out the door. That's neither of those things are really appropriate.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it was medicine that we had to swallow, really. So we were then at a point where our polity was okay, our sort of constitution and things like that were all sorted, and then it was a case of cracking on with the mission work. And like I say, doors were then flying open for us that just weren't really there, and a lot of it was being pressed forward by certain individuals. Things just started happening, really. And then it was kind of a case of just responding to what was available to us.
So you brought those changes through that you wanted to bring through from this beginning. Any major bombs did you really stuff up?
probably. I don't know. What's interesting is because things were so horrible for us in the first 2 years, I would say pretty well every other problem was put into a level of perspective that I think, you know, I'm sure there were things that weren't great and weren't right and didn't go brilliantly, but they were all kind of put into the perspective and filtered through this. Yeah. We've had 2 years of a guy trying to start a coup and get you sacked and all the rest of it. And then you just think, well, okay, it's not actually that big an issue, is it?
Yeah, and I guess yours is a different situation in some ways. I mean, we tried a previous church to help revitalise a tiny little church. It was really small, you know, and we managed to drag it kicking and screaming into the 18th century. But it didn't work. But I guess the thing is, when we went in there, we knew it was a complete revitalisation. And why it didn't work was we knew it needed starting from scratch. They were like, can you just improve what we've got? Whereas I guess you were coming into a situation where you knew there were a few tinkering things, but perhaps the level, you didn't know you were doing a full revitalisation in the way that maybe you have done.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. I think if I'd known it was the revitalisation job it was, or I'd been aware of quite how embedded and problematic those issues were, I don't even know whether I would have come, which is interesting because I think the Lord does that.
Yeah.
He decides he's got a person, he wants to do a thing, and he just sets the circumstances to make it happen, doesn't he? And I think I didn't know those things because he knew I wouldn't go, and I was the guy who he wanted there. And actually, I suspect I was the guy who wanted there because I was the guy who was going to get rid of some of these people. Because he's decided he wants a gospel-preaching church. And for whatever reason, it's not what I would have done, but I'm the guy he's decided is going to do that. I think other things you kind of learn along the way. I'd never had any dealings with asylum seekers, really, or Iranians. And again, I think in my early days, I was probably overly charitable about people's testimonies and things like that. I'd probably put an awful lot of store by the language problem and go, I'm not quite sure, and then be quite generous. Maybe I'm just getting grumpier as I get older, but I've
can't believe that.
Spending time with you. But I've got a lot tighter on that.
Yeah.
And actually, in line with our polity, I mean, we now say we only go to court for people who are in membership.
Yeah.
Because that's how we affirm people as believers. Yeah. Whereas in the past, I would have gone to court for people who weren't in membership. But then you'd sit in court and make yourself look like a prat.
Well, the other thing is as well, if, you know, if our ecclesiology is anything that we say it is, if you go to court for somebody who's not in membership, you as an elder are deciding who's in membership. I mean, maybe we can talk about this in another podcast, but, you know, it's like with the communion thing. If we say, oh, well, you're not in membership, but at elder's discretion we'll let you, you know, well, the elders are deciding who's a Christian, not the church.
Yes.
Which seems to throw, you know, big chunks of Matthew and other parts of the New Testament right in the bin.
And even if you're a pragmatist, which is obviously the best way to operate your church, isn't it? It doesn't work anyway. Can you go to court and you go, I just decided.
Yeah.
Whereas I can actually go to court these days and say, look, my whole church has agreed this. It's not just me. I'm actually representing 30, 40 different people who are all saying the same thing. And that lends more credence to it, I think.
Yeah.
So I definitely learnt loads about dealing with asylum seekers, the kind of problems you get, the realities of what they're facing, the way that people will try and skew the system. Not everybody who says they're a believer is honest on those things, and you kind of come to learn the sort of half-truths you get fed. A lot of that I think I handled very badly. Happily, I had people like Dave Skinner in the church who dealt with some of that, so I'm sure I would have dropped bigger clangers more frequently. But I think we've probably got better on that. And actually, we have a better set of Iranian people in the church now as a result, because they're people who you can be much more confident and genuine, and you've got good evidence for that.
So if someone was coming into a situation like you did now, established church, but there's problems and whatever, what would you say to them? Don't. Go and be a bin man.
I think lay out your stall early. One of the things that helped me was I was very, very clear early on. I had a very strong sense of what our polity should be, which I would say your polity and your ecclesiology is probably your most important thing to get sorted first. And I had a very clear and strong sense of what that should be. And I laid that out early. And I said, if we don't want to do that, don't have me. And then all the way through, whenever anybody fought, I could say, look, I said this before you hired me and you hired me. And so that's what we're going to do. And that's the end of it. I was much more lenient on stuff that I decided was right. But I hadn't said, because I said, look, I hadn't said that. I appreciate you didn't know I was going to say that. I didn't know I was necessarily going to say that. So we can be a bit more lenient about that. But if you've signed me up on these terms, that's what we're going to do. So I would just say you need to be clear before you go in as to what you're going to do, where you're going to go. Let people decide whether they are willing to go with that or not. And the moment they hire you and say, yes, we're fine with that, that's when you can say legitimately, this is what I said I'd do. That's what we're going
to
do.
Yeah. And I guess expect it to be a nightmare at points.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like I said, we tried to help this little church. And I just naively, you know, I'd been in ministry, I think, properly for 2 years. And so I said, oh, they love me. You know, the folks from my valley, the Cone Valley back in Huddersfield. It's going to be great. They've got a great gospel heart, blah, 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 blah. You know, we'll just, I can explain things and they'll want to go for it. And, you know, they did move. They did move, but they moved 2 yards and they needed to move 500.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't there. It was a battle. It was a long slog. And I think it's when we've talked about when we're planting a church, it's a long slog reaching the unbelievers, often with revitalizations, it's that long slog of helping turn the ship rather than actually getting the ship going. I guess a better illustration is, you know, the world's strongest man, they're pulling an aeroplane. You know, when you're planting a church, it's like getting that aeroplane going. You know, it's always that once he's going, it's fine. But then if you've got to turn it around and go the other way, that's rock hard as well.
I think it's more, the more you can say up front,
yeah,
the better. Because if you're very clear where you're going, why you're going there, what you're going to do, and you lay all that out before you're hired, I think you can do all of that stuff immediately. Because you can say, that's what I said I would do, that's what you signed me up for to do. The stuff you have to go slowly on, the stuff you don't say, that you only figure out later, and you go, I didn't really realise that, I didn't really know that, that's the stuff you've got to take slow, because everyone can rightly turn around and say, you never said you'd do that. And you have to admit, I didn't say that. And I can't just now land that on you as if that's what you agreed to when you didn't.
And I guess even with the stuff you say up front, you've got to work hard to take people with you, I guess, because it's like we said before, like in our situation, the slowness of it all, there's knowing. You know, you can say, we're going to move to this kind of polity or whatever. And people go, oh, yeah, we know that. That sounds, you know, and in the honeymoon period, that sounds all fine. And then you get into it and people go, oh, and it's working hard to take people through
well,
that.
Well, you actually have to work out who are the people who will ever come with you and who are the people who are never going to come with you. And there are some people who will just do what you say because you're the pastor. And there are some people who never do what you say because you're the pastor. And there's a whole group of people in the middle who are there to be won.
Yeah.
I think basically if you're aiming for consensus on everything, you probably won't get it. And that's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
If you realise there are some people who never come with you, what you do is you basically, it sounds bad, but you kind of say, well, okay, I'm not going to worry about you. We're going to do this stuff. I'm going to win the people who are winnable. I'm going to allow the people who will rubber stamp what I think anyway to rubber stamp what I think. And if I've got those guys on board, then we do it. And eventually these guys will either go, we're in a minority and have to get on board, or I don't like this and I'm going to go. And that's, I think that's the key. Work out who the people who are winnable are and who you have to win and who you don't have to win, and focus on those who are winnable.